Oh boy, busy week so far this week, Stacey Herbert.
And it's only just begun today.
Oh, is it today the first day? Do we have our week starts on Sunday, or does it end on Sunday? I'm not sure about that. What do you think?
I always thought that a new week is supposed to start on Sunday. It goes from Sunday to Sunday, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we could say that today. How about that? We say that this is the beginning of this next week.
Yeah,
what
why
do you
not?
Think about that?
Why not?
Should we say that?
Yeah.
So we were on the Bazooka Joe show yesterday.
Yes.
Which was interesting. Nice. He did a really good job, I thought, because we had that phone difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And but he really put together a good show. He got some of our material from our shows in there, and he also was sick. He had food poisoning, didn't he?
Not in the middle of the show, though.
No. He's putting it together. He put it in a Herculean effort to get that show together. And I think, it's good. You know, highlights certainly what we're trying to do over here at the various shows, the Truth About Markets, Price Precedes News. I was talking about it on his show. The politics are what you fill in later. It's a coloring book. I'll say that. It's a coloring book. The finance news are the broad, bold, black pictures, you see, that the banks hand us. And then we in the news media color in the empty spaces with different colors, and that's the politics. But they already have figured out. You know, I should come up with that. I should come up with a coloring book called the Kleptocrats Coloring Book.
I think that's probably a really good idea, especially targeting Americans who are a little bit more simplistic in their understanding of the world, but they might like a coloring book, and you could use that to subversively get in there and teach them about the world.
Yeah, like the Enron scandal. Break it down to something that you could fit on a couple of pages of a coloring book.
And you can convince Walmart to stack it next to the adult-sized tricycles?
For those obese, fat, lard-sucking, Doha-round-rejecting, Israel-supporting, genocide, profiteering.
Well, you understand now why these tricycle-riding Americans are supporting the Israeli invasion of Lebanon is because all the babies are being killed. So Americans don't want the competition. Remember, we always point out that Americans don't like competition.
Whose babies? What?
Well, Lebanese babies.
They're being killed.
Yeah, this morning there's an apartment building where a bunch of families were hiding in the basement, and Israel took that one out this morning, killing a bunch of babies. But Americans don't like the competition. They want to be the biggest babies in the world.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
They don't like babies.
I see. They want to be the biggest babies. These Lebanese babies, they were too cute.
Exactly.
Getting too much attention.
Well, yeah, because
real babies. Put their face on the news, and people might have some compunction about committing babyicide.
Exactly. And when they don't want people, other human beings, Europeans or Latin Americans or Middle Eastern people, to see real babies. Because they're cute. Big, giant, obese American babies are pretty ugly.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, they weigh 300 pounds.
Exactly.
They come out of the womb, they split that woman's vagina like a split pig. And then they got to sew her up using barbed wire. Those big, fat, baby whale birthing, processed food chomping. So anyway, this is today's Sunday Times from London.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good newspaper to read, get caught up on things, give you a good preview, an overview, and a summing up of the trends.
Can Rupert Murdoch quote you on that?
Oh, is that one of his? Is this one of his newspapers, Murdoch?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not the Financial Times, of course, which is the best newspaper in the world, according to Max Kaiser and Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, but Rupert Murdoch also owns B Sky B and the Sunday Times, and apparently he does complain about them often, about their, that they, he calls them liberal or you know, like Noam Chomsky. I think he called B Sky B almost Noam Chomsky-like.
Because oh, really?
They,
oh, keep talking, because I hear the garbage men outside.
Part of their charter.
I'm going to get ready for a major noise.
Part of their charter and part of their being able to get some of the top newsmen in the world was they said they demanded editorial independence from him.
Oh, right.
Unlike the Sun or News of the World. So he often disagrees with what they say.
Well, Blair is with Murdoch this weekend at Pebble Beach.
Uh-huh.
On our show yesterday, we talked about that as being Herb Allen's annual media fest.
You did, yes.
Yes, and I was a bit off on that. This is some new confab Yes. You know, these new, there's a bull market in billionaire confabs.
Yeah.
And, so this one is Murdoch, and he's at Pebble Beach, near Pebble Beach, near San Francisco, and he's got all the heads of states and all the people he's trying to recruit to his board of directors so that he can cut sweetheart deals with countries and governments and other corporations to tilt the capitalist table of commerce in his direction and steal the money, destabilize the economy, and cause events like 9/11 and 7/7. He is the primary reason you have terrorism, so-called terrorism, is because he creates the conditions for it. You can't really blame the people for, you can't, you know, if, you know, I'll come up with a good metaphor here. I'm going to think of one on the fly. But moths, would you blame the moths? If you're trying to get rid of the moths, do you A, turn the, keep the light on, or B, turn the light off?
You know what? I was just thinking of moths last night. I couldn't get to sleep because I was thinking about these moths that ruin all my clothes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about these moth balls that the kids are eating now?
Oh, my God.
They read about that one?
Yeah. They're bagging moth balls.
What country was this?
America, of course.
Oh, my God. They're eating and chewing and breathing in mothball vapors.
Yeah.
That's the new high.
That's so effing disgusting. Yes, they're putting it in plastic bags and breathing in the air. And then when that's not enough of a high anymore, they're eating it.
Eating mothballs.
Mothballs. Imagine trying to kiss that person.
It's Night of the Living Dead, I tell you, over there in America. You got these zombie kids eating mothballs, stalking around the Twinkie department of the grocery store looking for lard to suck down. Yes, sir. Welcome to the all-you-can-eat buffet. And there's the buffet. Would you like some mothballs with that?
It's going to be a new dessert.
It's absolutely bizarro.
Maybe somebody should come up with a mothball
drink. Why can't they just stick to the classics like sniffing glue?
Exactly.
You know, in my day, the kids were happy just to sniff a little airplane glue. Now they're getting into this mothball chomping. Well, I wanted to talk about a couple of things here. I wanted to talk about oil and water. Not bread and chocolate, but oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
Oil and water. Because, you know, the thing is that, of course, on Drudge Report, they got a screaming headline there that Mel Gibson is an anti-Semite because he got arrested for drunk driving over the weekend and used a slur in his drunken rage, accusing the Jewish population of less than proper behavior. So the thing is that this is the interesting part of the history that we're in, because on one hand, the sane, you see that over there, Drudge? Mad Mel in Malibu, quote, frickin' Jew, he says.
Right? Yeah.
So he's screaming at the Jews.
Oh, he said effing Jews to the police officer. The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you a Jew?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, you see, this is the interesting thing. I mean, you got two points here. Number one, you know, the truth about markets, looking at the numbers first and the news later, coloring in the coloring book of the preordained economic conditions set up by the insiders and market manipulators are what we're fighting against, not the coloring book after effect, not the colors that Fox News paints in later. We're trying to redraw the lines before the coloring takes place, if I may say that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, the thing is that over there in Israel, they're pushing into Lebanon for a couple of reasons. Number one, to have access to which river? What river is it called?
The Litani River.
The Litani River. Mm-hmm. Because obviously in the desert you need water. And they're pushing up to the Litani River and they're masking it as a moral crusade. But mm-hmm. It's just stealing water.
Exactly what happened in the West Bank and why Israel, I was going to say America, Israel will never give back the West Bank to Palestinians.
Because of the water.
That's where all the water is for Palestine?
Right.
Underground?
Because water is becoming more valuable than oil in a lot of respects.
Mm-hmm.
Water is the blue gold, if you will. I mean, water, especially with global warming kicking in a big way, and we're going to have another good story here on this global warming situation, which we're going to get to in a second. But so water is extremely important. So Israel is committing genocide in Lebanon to get to the water. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, on the oil front, you've got now, it's clear what's going on there in the Mideast is that from Iraq to Israeli ports, they're building a pipeline?
There are two sort of oil moves in this. First of all, they want, America wants the oil pipeline from northern Iraq, I believe it's from Mosul, to Haifa, to go via Syria because it's faster, cheaper, and apparently there's already, most of the pipeline is already there, i.e. it's Syrian-owned. And then the Sayan Tbilisi Baku oil pipeline across the Caspian Sea, Middle East, not Middle East, but Central Asian countries, has just opened this past, the day before the invasion of Lebanon, coincidentally enough. And that comes out right in the Eastern Mediterranean. And Israel wants to dominate the Eastern Mediterranean, which could explain them dumping a bunch of oil in there.
Oh, right, yeah.
To keep the tourists away. Because remember, they don't like tourists to be in places that they want to control militarily.
Right.
So they want this, the Baku pipeline, to bring the oil to the Eastern Mediterranean. Then Israel will take it and then export it back to Asia as a way to keep the Chinese and other Asian countries from having their own control over the price of oil or their access to oil.
Right. So because America and Israel want to be the axe when it comes to the price of oil, to use a Wall Street expression.
Yeah.
They want to be determining the price of oil. They want to be take the place basically of OPEC.
Yeah.
You know, OPEC sets the price, but the U.S. wants to set the price. They don't want China to set the price.
No.
They don't want Russia to set the price. So they are using Israel as a the tip of the spear to pierce the heart of Mideast politics. Israel, just to keep Israel going, they have to have access to water. So they're committing genocide on the local level. And then to fulfill the mandate as dictated to them by the U.S. and Britain, they are committing genocide to secure these oil reserves. And there's an oil flowing then from Iraq to the ports of Israel. What town are the ports in?
Haifa.
Haifa.
I believe there's one other port. I'm not quite sure right off the top of my head.
So the Iraq to Haifa play.
Uh-huh.
Then thirdly, you have now the biggest ecological oil disaster in the history of the Mediterranean as a result of this conflict. So you've got politics, you've got genocide, you've got ecological holocaust, you've got... So Israel is clearly, and the U.S. and Britain, they've created a troika. You know, they are... You know, well, I don't know. What do you compare? They're killing people. they're murderers. They're murderers.
They're murderers. They're developing their own brand of it. Before it's been for, I guess it's always for resources or land or power. But they're really they're doing it in a different way, a different sort of people. I guess it hasn't been seen anyway for about what? When were the last Crusades?
They were 1,000 years ago.
700 years ago, maybe.
And I think the Ninth Crusade was the last one.
Uh huh.
And then in the 1980s, there was a jazz rock fusion group called the Crusaders with Joe Zawinul on drums.
They were the 10th Crusaders.
That was the 10th. And now in the year 2000 is the 11th Crusade with a back to the Christian and Arab-Jewish triangle of just like playing a game of global twister naked without any lubrication.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of rubbing up against each other and sticking... slot A into various hole B. I'm not really sure who's doing what to whom anymore. It's just a one big unremitting orgy of nonsense. But anyway, so but now the fourth piece of the puzzle, the top ecological disaster, the oil quest, and the water grab. Then you've got the media play, which is to keep pushing this button. It's great if you get a Hollywood celebrity like Mel Gibson. You can put him on Drudge Report and make him out as an anti-Semite, as they portray him. Then this is a way to basically try to make Jewish Israeli genocide blameless, that there's nothing wrong with it. It's to make immaculate. It's an immaculate genocide. See, during the it's the same thing the Germans tried to do when they were committing genocide against the Jews in World War II. They were they what do? They portrayed them as subhuman, so you couldn't feel guilty about it. So now the Jews, having learned that, are portraying these Lebanese and Palestinians as subhuman, so that they can get an immaculate genocide going. And then Mel Gibson, who's a Hollywood celebrity, any Hollywood celebrity that in a drunken slurring kind of moment barks some ethnic slur, of course, this is portrayed as proof. This is portrayed as the rallying cry. I mean, of course, he made that that movie about Jesus.
Well, that, bringing that back to Jesus, okay. Israel is empowering these people. They're empowering Opus Dei-like people. They're empowering evangelicals. Now, if you understand what these people want, these people believe that Armageddon will happen, and at the very last minute, the Jews will be converted or killed. So this is
that what happens according to that coloring book?
Yeah. So Israel, by aligning themselves with Bush, they're mutually empowering each other, but at the ultimate belief that their bases all want the destruction of the other.
Mm.
I mean, it's exactly like America financing Al-Qaeda. And then Al-Qaeda comes back and kills them. The Jews are empowering and validating the evangelical Christians who believe, at the end of the day, that the Jews are not the chosen people, that they are, and that they will be tortured and killed and maimed during the Armageddon and the Second Coming.
I feel so out of it being an Episcopalian.
Well,
they don't have
honey,
any of this cool stuff.
Well,
what do we believe in? You know, vodka and Labrador retrievers.
Well, the evangelicals apparently came from the Episcopalians.
Yeah,
it came from people.
Exactly. Why don't they just focus on getting drunk like any good Episcopalian does, and you know, keeping our yacht nice and shiny?
Well, obviously there were some splinter groups who were outraged at the drunkenness of the Episcopalian.
Well, you see, ultimately, the Episcopalians had the recipe for longevity. You know, pickling yourself in your own bar. Well, you know, the point of this show is to look at the numbers, of course, and try to make some sense out of it from the point of view of money management, because I'm concerned about keeping myself rich. So I don't want to get caught up in the politics too much here. Gold, it doesn't look like this is a reason to sell my gold.
No.
Should I sell my Bear X fund and my other short-only funds? Because, you know, making a bet on markets going down. I'm not sure this is giving me any encouragement to do that. Although the Dow Jones is breaking out based on all that free money pouring in. So I think that's got to be, maybe I'll throttle back a little bit on my Bear X fund and my other fund. Although,
well, as you know, everybody comes back from summer holidays, September through November.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, that's always the time when big things happen in the market, usually down. And then, of course, once Bush is genuinely a lame duck after these next elections in November, all hell could break loose. You have no idea what he's going to do to the American people.
Yeah, well, I mean, they'll target Americans, obviously, because as the U.S. runs out of money, they're going to start to go after their own.
Well, yeah, look what Bush allowed Ken Lay to do to Californians.
Right.
So why is he going to stop Citibank or Exxon or Halliburton or Bechtel from killing Americans? He's not going to, if there's a profit in it, and there is. There's a profit in it.
No, I don't trust him. That's why I don't trust him. I mean, they're going to start going after their own citizens in a very, very aggressive way. You know, obviously they're recruiting more of these kids to go into Iraq to commit genocide. It's kind of a stealth draft they got going. Because they target them when they're in their 12, 13, 14-year-old status now. They got them on the mailing list. They put them in the database. Let's move on to why that might be a bad idea. Because the issue that really needs to be focused on, if you know, the Israeli-Palestinian, the you know, that kind of regional scuttlebutt,
yeah,
is amusing, of course, if you are making bets and that are paying off by that foolishness. I'm very amused by it. Thank you. But the bigger problem here, the one that's beyond the Mel Gibson's current inebriation while driving news, is the heat wave, global heat wave. See, this is actually more concern to me, because even if you've got millions and millions of dollars, if the globe catches fire around the globe, it's not going to help me much. It's not gonna, it doesn't matter, you know. That's a bigger problem, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like, according to the Times here, it looks like being the hottest July on record in Britain is not alone in experiencing extreme conditions. Hot, arid, oh my God, I'm seeing this one. Hot, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God, what's going on over there?
Hot, arid weather is afflicting millions of Americans in dozens of countries across Europe and parts of East Asia. The phenomenon has surprised. I love this word, surprised.
Yeah.
Meteorologist. Well, no, it's not true. I mean, the meteorologists that are interviewed on Fox News fake being surprised. But the meteorologists that everyone else has been talking about this for 20 years now. They're used to seeing a drought as a regional, not a global problem. This weekend, they said early analysis of the hot weather, together with the size of the areas affected, suggested it was linked to global climate change, greenhouse gas emissions, raised the likelihood of heat waves like this one, said Dave Griggs, a Met Office representative on the Joint Scientific Committee of the World Climate Research Program. Let's see. Most of the U.S. is 3 to 7 degrees above average for the time of year. Western states are 9 degrees higher.
Is that centigrade or?
Centigrade.
Uh-huh. That's pretty big.
Temperatures in Death Valley, California reached 56 degrees centigrade.
Fucking hell. I'm sorry to swear, but my God.
So, the key here is we've now moved from regional heat waves to a global heat wave, a global phenomenon. And this is one of those positive feedback loops where regionally you've got a heat wave. And then, so, you know, people are remarkably stupid because you'll be standing in one state in America or in one country somewhere in the world, and you'll read a story that says there's a global heat wave somewhere else, and you'll be thinking, well, I'm not hot. What do I care? So this type of selfishness, this type of neoliberal thought is one that keeps the frog in the pan boiling alive until such time as it's too late to jump out of the pan and the frog is cooked. And so it's a global... Now, all the regions now are simultaneously heating up. It's a global heat oven. This is the... Remember we were talking about the Auschwitz?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the train to Treblinka and how guys like Fox News, Murdoch, they throw rose petals on the train tracks to Treblinka or Auschwitz. And that Halliburton and Exxon and these people who support these companies that are putting all the carbon into the atmosphere are creating a global death camp gas oven condition. It killed 130 people last week. As we know, the Jews, like 6 million died in the concentration camps in World War II. According to James Lovelock, 6 billion people around the world are facing extermination due to climate change and global warming and other problems in the ecology that are the result of business. That's based on a model of doing business that's inherently flawed because they don't put any value on life. They only put value on death. It's only the quicker that you kill people, the more money you make. And this is how they value their stock price. And the stock price is the holy grail, the prima franca, the ticker tape has replaced the Bible in terms of what people look at or any religious text. You know, they look at the ticker tape and that's how they feel if the Dow Jones is up, which is another reason, by the way, just to digress for a moment. It was very important for the plunge protection team to bail out General Motors by the U.S. government buying back General Motors stock because General Motors is a Dow stock. It's one of the Dow 30. So it's a way to keep the whole Dow artificially high. And people have tied emotionally into a higher Dow. They feel then things are quote-unquote okay. So as long as the Dow Jones is going up, it's okay for Israel to commit genocide. It's okay for corporations to commit climate change atrocities that are killing people. It's okay that your neighbor is now strung out on mothballs and crack. As long as the Dow Jones goes higher, it's okay. So the government buying back stock in a company like General Motors, that's a Dow component, is manufacturing this feel-good factor using printed money, the fiat money that they print up over there in the Treasury. And, of course, that debases the value of the outstanding money. So your purchasing power collapses, a phenomenon also known as inflation. And this begins you down a slippery slope where not only is the climate changing and you're being burned to death like a Jew in a gas oven, but your net worth is going up in smoke as well due to loss of purchasing power. And you are, of course, what are you doing about it?
Well, what people are doing about it is exacerbating the situation, because I'm looking at The Independent and they're talking about some numbers coming out of Britain for this heat wave, because apparently next week is going to be even hotter than any of the July days.
Right.
So this year has seen a 40% rise in the sale of air conditioning units and fans. So
another positive feedback loop, because the more air conditioning, of course, creates the more global warming.
And it also puts a strain on the electricity grid. And we see the electricity grids were failing last week in London. And in California, there were power failures. And of course, this helps with killing people, because they go days without electricity and therefore they can't air condition themselves and they overheat. So in America, in California, the problem of the strain on the electric grid was compounded by the proliferation of big plasma televisions.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one. Plasma screen televisions, they use up as much energy as a huge refrigerator, right?
Yep, as a large refrigerator. So while people are staying in their air-conditioned houses to avoid going outside because it's too hot, they'll bake and they'll die, they stay in their air-conditioned houses, turn on their big plasma screen televisions, straining the electric grid, creating the conditions which they're trying to avoid, because when the power goes out, then they're stuck with no television and no electricity.
I tell you, it's Night of the Living Dead over there. Zombies putting themselves into the death oven. That's the difference between these death oven victims and the World War II. The World War II, the Jews actually resisted going into the death ovens, to a little bit anyway. They were, put up a little bit of a fight. But here, they don't put up any fight. They're like, please put us in that death oven quick. We it's warmer. We enjoy heat. We like it.
Another positive feedback loop. 26 million bottles of water were sold last week alone in the UK. Just in the UK.
26 million plastic bottles.
Yep.
Which, of course, end up in the oceans.
Yep.
And they get ground up, and they say that they do a sample of ocean water around the world, and they find something like, for every liter of ocean water, they find 2 or 3% of it right now is made up of plastic particles from these ground up plastic bottles.
Well, but also plastic is made from oil.
Right.
And it's flown from somewhere else in the world.
Right. Oh, they fly in Fiji water from Fiji or something like that. So it has incredible carbon dioxide emissions.
Yep.
To get it, to drink the plastic water, to drink in your air-conditioned home, to watch your plasma screen TV, which is draining the energy grid in ways that are causing more global warming, more climate change, and the chances now of your kids getting cancer, melanoma, dying, are higher today than they were last week, and it's happening precipitously. It's a climax. It's almost like global warming and climate change are now entering the climactic phase. I mean, if you have another week of global change and you have suddenly a million people die or something like this, something on that order, then there's going to be this huge outcry of, my God, we're killing ourselves. But by then it's going to be way too late, because the response of government will be to freeze everyone's activities across the world and to say, we have to sort this out. By any rioters in the street who are upset about this, they go into the Halliburton death camp pens set up in America, which they've already built. In the UK, of course, it'll be your ID card or RFID tag or whatever they got set up there. The GPS monitors will be, everyone has, stay in your homes. Don't move. The government has to sort this out.
Well, but we're talking about the ignorance of people who buy plasma screen TVs so that when they're hiding in their air-conditioned home from the heat, they can pass the time. But the ignorance is in the news today because, the Doha round of trade talks collapsed this week in Geneva.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is an interesting story in The Guardian. According to Andrew Kohut, president of the Pew Research Center, an independent Washington-based polling organization, the collapse in the trade talks reinforces the view that America is conducting its foreign policy, in this case trade, in its own interest. Our surveys show one of the biggest criticisms of foreign policy is its unilateralism. American policies are seen to increase the gap between rich and poor countries, he says. But he adds, and this is the interesting point about Americans on tricycles watching their plasma screen TV, He adds that U.S. priorities may remain unchanged because of the lack of profile these issues have at home. He says, quote, the world is more sensitive to what we do, i.e. Americans, in trade than Americans are. When steel tariffs were in place, for example, we did a poll across Europe, and most people in Europe were aware of them and critical. Most people in America, however, were not aware at all. So then they go on to say that this is spreading anti-Americanism because Europeans assume that Americans understand and know as they do about the tariffs and subsidies, but they don't. So they assume that Americans are just indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
So while ignorance may be bliss to the Americans, it's creating hatred in the rest of the world.
Right. So the rest of the world thinks that America is aware of these issues and chooses to very callously support them.
Well, they're overestimating the intelligence of Americans.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Europe, there are lots of different newspapers, lots of different points of view, and there is some debate. In America, it's basically a monolithic media culture, and there is no debate. And so the Americans aren't informed. They're not being informed of what's going on in the rest of the world. And remember, America is less than 5% of the world's population. It's 25% of the world's GDP, but that's all based on borrowed money. And it also kicks out more than 27% of all the world's garbage problems. So if you're living outside of the United States, you have to ask yourself a very simple question. If America disappeared, what bad would that do? Well, it would take away 27% of the world's garbage problems. Mm-hmm. With less than 5% of the world's population, that's an incredible cost-benefit analysis. That's an incredible gain. You're taking away 5% of the population and you're taking away 25%, 7%, 8% of the world's garbage problems?
Plus, it's saving you a load of money. You wouldn't need to buy air conditioning units. All those people in Britain, the 40% increase in the sale of air conditioning units. You wouldn't need to be, your energy costs wouldn't have doubled in the past 2 years.
Right.
You wouldn't need to be buying all that bottled water because you wouldn't be stupid.
You get rid of the biggest cause of World War III, as it's being called.
You wouldn't be financing. You remember last year alone, Britain doubled their exports of arms to Israel.
Okay, so the rest of the world is getting hip to the fact that the U.S. is a liability. It's a global liability.
Yep.
I mean, to put it in the business terms, the truth about markets, the bottom line for the 95% of the world's population that are not America is that the U.S. is a liability. It's a financial liability. That's the bottom line. Now, the next paragraph in this article that you're quoting, it says very simply, in the developing world, there are already examples of U.S. products being boycotted. And the number one boycotted product they mention is Coca-Cola.
In India, yes.
Mm-hmm. And this obviously, and they also mentioned McDonald's. Now, Coca-Cola, as we say in the show, is extraordinarily vulnerable to a global boycott. This is why, if you're listening to this show and you want to preserve your wealth, not only should you be buying gold, but you should take a short sale position against Coca-Cola. And you can do that quite easily by getting involved in a fund that shorts stocks in the fund. And I think that there's an exchange-traded fund that'll short the Dow 30 stocks. They're short the Dow 30 stocks. Coca-Cola is another Dow stock. And you'll also be short General Motors in that, which I think ultimately General Motors will go to zero after they run out of money to keep that piece of shit alive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're short the Dow 30 stocks, which include Coca-Cola, and you buy gold, and this is a way to preserve, you know, to stay alive while the rest of the world figures out how to get rid of the U.S. because it's the biggest liability. It's just an incredible liability. And they're doing it through these boycotts. It's the only way to stop cancer is to cut it off from its food. You know, cancer has to be the way to get rid of it. You have to get rid of its ability to grow, its nutrient flow. So the people buying Coca-Cola are sponsoring this genocide in Palestine and in Lebanon. And those connections now are being made. Remember, we've been saying this week that there's three P's. First, the world hated Bush. Then the world hated Americans, and now the world's hating American products. We go from the president to the people to the products, PPP. Mm-hmm. And now we're at the third P stage, right on schedule, I might add. I knew this was going to happen. I saw this. I had a vision 4 years ago when I started Karma Bank.
Yes,
I knew
you did.
That the there was a coup d'etat in the year 2000, and that the rest of the world, which has a legacy of support for America based on the events of World War II, that they would that would run out at this time, and you would have this P2P2P phenomenon of first they would hate the president, then they would hate the people, now they hate the products. So Coca-Cola is a company and a stock that is vulnerable to a massive backlash around the world from people who are now, you know, they're fed up. They're like, well, look, we're not giving you the benefit of the doubt anymore. You're the biggest ecological carbon emission generator country. You're feeding this war in Israel. You're feeding the genocide. I mean, the rest of the world, can you believe that? They can't believe that the Bush has said, given Israel a couple of weeks to slaughter Palestinians and Lebanese, and before they have some kind of a ceasefire notion. I mean, that's like that's like a guard at a prison. They're going to let the some guy rape the other prisoner for a couple of, you know.
That's what America does in their prisons.
Yeah.
They do allow that. But, I mean, the most shocking thing is actually Blair standing beside him on this issue because Europeans in general just don't. They don't support this kind of genocide because they've already done it. You know, they did it 60 years ago. They're the ones that already did this. Created a mess in the world from their colonization of the world. So now America's trying to move in there and commit the same mistakes they already made. And many of these people were alive when these mistakes were already made.
Wow. Well, let's see what's going on. You know, speaking of Britain, you know, we talk about the inflation index being skewed in ways that doesn't show true inflation. So now they're talking about it in London, too, now. What they have in London.
Oh, they're hiding their numbers as well?
Yeah. Yeah, what they say is that the CPI, or Consumer Price Index, they should call it the CHAV Price Index.
Why? What do you mean?
Well, the CHAV, which is slang in Britain for white trash, the CHAVs, these are the poor white trash, kind of M&M wannabes. And they live in those council estates, and they smoke, you know, remember who John Reed said that council estate mothers, they need to take a break and smoke. They have such crappy lives.
Yeah. Yeah, like this was his argument against restricting the use of smoking.
Yeah.
Like that people wanted to introduce anti-smoking laws. And he said, what about these poor people on council estates? Their lives are so miserable. They deserve a smoke.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are the chaps. So the CPI, the basket of goods that they use to calculate whether or not prices are going up or not, it excludes transportation, fuel, healthcare, and education.
Okay. All the things that are going up in price, they exclude.
Yeah. But it includes and it overweights things like slave-made goods from China, processed food. Of course, the price of food keeps going down because they keep injecting more corn syrup and corn products, and corn is the benefit of huge government subsidies.
The cost of real food is going up, but the cost of it's not even really food. It looks like food. Which we call it? It's like
food,
a coloring book food.
It's food-ish.
It's food-ish. Okay. Food-ish is staying the same.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's right, more or less.
Yeah.
So the data show that recreational goods like crap made from slave labor in China is going down. It's only 3% of the basket includes public transportation, right?
Okay, yeah. And that's going up.
Well, check this out. This is an amazing number. You're going to even be shocked by this one.
What's that?
Okay, this guy is quoted as saying, I don't travel by train anymore unless I have to because the prices are now ludicrous. It costs blank blank a day to commute to Manchester by train. How much does this man pay per day to commute to Manchester?
From London?
I'm assuming it's from London.
It's probably, because I've done that journey a few times, probably £50.
£200.
Oh, my God.
So he's spending $375 a day to commute to work. Remember, the only reason this is so is because the government, which had a rail system, a transportation system that, you know, wasn't that great, but it, you know, got people kind of from point A to point B, they gave it over to private contractors who then stripped all the assets and loaded it up with debt and made the situation much worse and now the prices are up, have skyrocketed. And that's just a direct, criminal activity by this government, by this Blair government. And they've done it in transportation and health. Health costs, of course, are skyrocketing for the same reason. Fuel costs are skyrocketing because of the support for the genocide happening in the Mideast, so that the Shmatas can build condos in the West Bank. And so this is all part of the process to enslave the population, because that's the point. It's not, they're not trying to make a lot of money. They're not trying to make most of the money. They're trying to take all the money. It's winner take all. That's the difference between this kind, this cycle, and you have to go back a couple hundred years to realize that we're back into a feudal cycle. But they give some other prices in here. While passport fees have risen 57% in less than a year, energy prices have risen by more than 25%, and the cost of some items are spiraling. Most consumers are baffled by the government's insistence that the inflation is still only 2.5%. The chancellor commonly cites low inflation as among New Labor's greatest achievements. However, data compiled by the Office for National Statistics suggests that the government's typical shopping basket used to assess inflation has been piled high with cheap goods imported from slave labor in China, while other expensive items and services are represented sparingly, because they create this government statistic that essentially is a bogus number. It's lying. They lie. Well, so there's a lot of benefits why the government would issue a lying number. First of all, the government that has to pay out pensions to people, that amount is tied to inflation. So if they lie about the true inflation rate, the amount of money the government has to pay out to pensioners is artificially kept low. That gives the government more money to give to Israel to go commit genocide. So if they were to pay out the true pension obligations that by law are owed these pensioners, they would have less money to give to Israel to commit genocide. So that would be, a lot of lives would be saved if the inflation rate were stipulated and stated as true number. Another reason to keep the inflation rate way low is that it also stimulates or signals to the Federal Reserve Bank of England, or the Bank of England, that they should keep interest rates lower than they should be. And this law, of course, gives bankers in the city the ability to borrow billions, hundreds of billions of pounds at artificially low rates to do mergers and acquisitions, to buy up competitors and make the economy less competitive because there's less competition. And you end up with a monolithic or duopoly economy, as you're seeing in the U.S. and the U.K. Very little competition now because of this cheap money that's allowed those with political connections in this fascist environment to buy up all competitors. Every single day you see huge deals. The M&A, the mergers and acquisitions in the last quarter, I think is at a new all-time record. That's all fueled by cheap money that's kept artificially low by the government misstating the true inflation number to help their buddies, their cronies, acquire huge assets of our publicly financed goods. And if it's not publicly financed, then it's depleting as its core asset the natural resources that we are all have been gifted, you know, by the creator. Why would Walmart monopolize these natural resources, or Coca-Cola or Exxon? Why do they get to monopolize the natural resources ahead of you and me? There's no democracy there. There's no justice there. They legitimize, they try to rationalize what they, their theft, by saying, we're God and you're not. You know, we're Zionists. You're not. That's why we're taking all the natural resources and leaving you on the curb. Well, unfortunately, this can only lead to one outcome, which is violence. But again, if you're selling the bullets and you're selling the planes and you're selling the war,
and you own the prisons,
then that's what they're hoping for. Again, they win. Heads, they win. Tails, we lose.
And then you won't notice inflation as well. I mean, part of the reason also why they underreport inflation is in order to maintain your ignorance about how worthless your fiat currencies are. If they tell you that the true inflation rate is what it is, say 8 or 9%, then you start to lose faith in the value of the money that you have in your pocket, or the value of the money that you work for.
Right.
So you are less and less willing to trade your time and your work and your energy for something that's just going to be worth less by the time you collect it.
Right. So it's a confidence game.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's on the front page here? The Sunday Times. Oh, apparently, you know, Sir Cliff Richard, some pop star from the 50s.
Yeah, really cheesy songs he sings.
Right. Well, Tony Blair stays at his house
Yeah, in Barbados.
Every summer. He gives them a free ride. Uh-huh. Quote, unquote, free. Well, it turns out that Cliff Richards, his songs are due to expire from copyright protection starting in the year 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been using these years with Blair at his house to lobby Blair to extend copyright from 50 years to 70 years mm-hmm. so that Cliff Richard can get another 20 years with monopoly income.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Blair is pushing for this copyright extension so that it more resembles the U.S. law of 70 years. Now, copyright monopoly like this is just another nail in the coffin of commerce, free speech, and culture. You don't want, because ideas, Cliff Richard, okay, he's a musician, he writes some songs, but he wasn't born in a vacuum. Cliff Richard borrowed heavily from musicians before him, and musicians from, you know, going forward can borrow from Cliff Richard. There is a case to be made for limited monopoly power for copyright, which under the framers of the U.S. Constitution, it was originally 14 years with a 14-year extension. Let's call it 28 years.
Mm-hmm. And the purpose of it was because the publishing of books at that time was a very expensive endeavor.
Right.
So they just felt that the publisher should have the right to make the money back that it cost to produce the book.
Right. So there's a lot of upfront costs there.
Yeah.
Now, with vinyl records that came in and the cost of reproduction dropping to pennies, what a smart government would have done is to roll back copyright law
mm-hmm.
back to more to its original, maybe 14 years, give a limited monopoly value. But instead, because it's a fascist world where corporations and government are in bed together, copyright is extended. It's almost to the point of perpetual copyright. Which means that ideas that were freely circulating for thousands of years, like music in Africa, for example, the line Sleep Tonight, I think that's the name of the song,
mm-hmm.
is an African song for thousands, you know, a rhythm or a beat or something that's been around in Africa for thousands of years. Disney decided, oh, no, we own that for our movie The Lion King. And so they basically take it out of the global consciousness, if you will. It's a form of lobotomization of the global Carl Jung might call the collective unconscious is being lobotomized by this pernicious copyright law. And it's only getting worse because the fascists, the Disneys, the Time Warner, the media companies who are now in government are using that leverage to expand copyright law. And Sir Keith Richard, that is Villa paid for.
See, Cliff Richard, not Keith Richards.
I said Keith?
I'm just imagining Sir Keith Richards.
Oh, my God.
He would never accept a knighthood. Hey, Tony, you want some hit of my bong?
I think Keith Richard is... I don't want to talk about Keith Richard.
You're the one that brought him up.
All right, I'm sorry. So Cliff, yeah, so... He's there in his villa, paid for by monopoly pricing,
uh-huh.
entertaining the prime minister to lobby for an additional extension of the copyright.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a lobotomy of the collective unconscious. It's effectively what these extended copyright or perpetual copyright laws amount to, which is another form of human rights abuse. This is a human rights abuse, is a perpetual copyright, along with the human rights abuse of you can't access to water. Don't have access to seeds, thanks to Monsanto's genetically modified seeds. That's a human rights issue, taking intellectual property, if you will, or seeds that were from the creator, turning them into fungible, tradable, patented commodities, where now Monsanto can have the pricing power to raise the prices to whatever people can handle in terms of putting themselves into debt to pay for that, just like the U.S. wants to be the exclusive pricing organization for oil. So they're willing to commit genocide, and they're willing to allow the earth to slip into global Auschwitz conditions. They're willing to throw 300 million Americans under the bus from death due to heat wave so that, what, five or six of these fuckers can just, you know, charge whatever they want for energy? Like, again, going back to the Enron situation where the Enron traders were laughing about the poor grannies in California that were probably going to die because of their market manipulation schemes. Now they're just applying it to them. You know, this is why when Ken Lay's funeral down there in Houston, Texas, they were equating him to Jesus and Martin Luther and Gandhi, you know, as being one of the most some kind of celebrated figure in American history because they see themselves as above not only the law, but they see themselves as godlike figures. Of course, as seeing themselves as godlike figures, they are creating satanic size mistakes. Well, anyway, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, personally, we've made our bets financially to because I don't think it's sustainable. So when the thing blows up, not only will we preserve our wealth, but hopefully we'll cash in a big way too. And I'm dedicated to
The race is on to get a satellite or a rocket to take us off this planet before it burns down, blows up.
It's like the story of the little red hen. You know that story?
No.
The little red hen, he's baking bread.
Yeah.
And he's like, who will help me knead the dough? And
oh, yeah.
Hello, Mr. Fox, will you help me? And they go, no, I'm too busy. And a little chicken, or hello, Mr. Turtle. And no one would help the little redhead make the bread. And then he makes the bread and says, who will help me eat the bread? And the turtle and the fox and the little birdie says, oh, we will. And the little redhead says, fuck you. This is a children's story I learned as a very small child. Okay, so we're making the bread. We're ready for the collapse. And when it collapses, you come knocking on our door. We say, fuck you. That's my humanitarian statement for the day. Okay. I mean, you didn't have the gumption to fight back against your oppressors.
Yeah, ignorance is no excuse, as you're finding out slowly but surely. You know, the matrix is being punctured. First it happened on 9/11. Now it's happening with trade talk collapses. Americans will find out way too late. Just because they're ignorant, they think they're all happy and you know, sunshiny, and the sun shines out of their ass. But they're going to wake up one day and realize it's all gone.
Why do they hate us?
Why do they hate us? Yeah.
Because you're sticking a knife in the heart of the global economy and ecology, you fucking asshole. So apparently the only one over there, number 10 Downing Street, who has a clue, somebody must have beaten him up with a clue stick, Jack Straw.
Yes, I saw he's come out swinging.
Yeah.
About cabinet in open revolt over Blair's Israel policy.
To make matters worse for the prime minister, the first of two U.S. planes bound for Tel Aviv carrying, quote, hazardous cargo landed at Ashire Prestwick. That's got to be in
Prestwick, yeah. In Glasgow.
UK somewhere.
Glasgow.
Oh, Glasgow? Sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Scottish people. It landed in Scotland airport yesterday as Labour MPs attacked Blair for allowing Britain to be the in-flight fueler for Israeli-bound bombs. Hello, 7-7. Hey, remember 7-7? You were crying about those 52 dead Londoners? Why were you crying? You are letting your prime minister commit genocide, you fucking hypocritical a-holes.
But this also, of course, it happens in London. The 7-7 happens in England. But the crimes are being committed in your name in Scotland, so you don't necessarily know about it. But also, to add insult to injury, the Scots overwhelmingly are against this invasion of Lebanon and against the genocidal maniacs of Israel. So allowing the American planes to land in Glasgow and refuel is a real punch in the face for them.
Well, you know, they're ginger, aren't they? Yes, so they deserve all the badness that comes their way.
Ginga, they say.
They're ginga. You know, they have all the oil in Scotland, of course.
Exactly. That Blair and governments before him have wasted, that they took without asking the Scots how to disperse it.
Right.
And whether or not
the Scots are notoriously
cheap.
Yeah, they're frugal.
Skinflints.
They'd be like Norway now.
Yeah.
They'd have all the oil. They would not have given it away at stupid prices.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be pissing on England. Maybe Scotland should band together with Ireland, and those two should secede. It shouldn't be just Ireland trying to break away from the British monarchy. It could be Ireland and Scotland. What if those two got together?
Northern Ireland and Scotland. Yeah.
What if they got together? Do you think they could effectively secede from Britain?
Yeah, they would have to get over the whole religion thing.
What are the religious differences?
The Scots like to beat up the Irish and call them Irish Paddies, the Catholic ones.
Oh, okay. So they're stupid.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you were working together, you could be rich and independent from British stupid people, but you're obviously too stupid to save yourself, so to hell with you. What else we got here? The government's doing a U-turn on free information. Ministers are to perform a U-turn on their commitment to open government by seeking to reduce the amount of information released to the public. Well, of course, this is part of the trend where governments are shutting the information availability down, whether in the U.S. they're not going to report M3. They don't report the commitment of commodities traders anymore. They are not reporting information that would give people who are not manipulating the markets from the inside a chance to, you know, a chance in hell to compete. They don't want that. They don't want competition. They're anti-competition. And in the UK, of course, they follow suit because the UK is basically George Bush's stool, as in, you know, fecal matter, as in, what do you call it, defecation. That's the, when George Bush is shit every morning, you see a perfect bust of Tony Blair.
I'm trying to find a story on Yeast Radio that Madge put up about this kind of information coming out.
While you're looking for that, you know, remember that movie Clockwork Orange where all the cops were criminals?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a good story. Hundreds of police may have criminal records. Scores of police officers in England and Wales have convictions for offenses including assault, theft, possession of a deadly weapon, and bodily harm. So they're hiring the crooks to be the cops.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Droogs. You my little droogs?
This is from Yeast Radio. Actually from Madge's site, americunt.com.
All right.
Gonzalez asks for protection from war crime statute. An obscure law approved by a Republican-controlled Congress a decade ago has made the Bush administration nervous that officials and troops involved in handling detainee matters might be accused of committing war crimes and prosecuted at some point in the U.S. courts. Senior officials have responded by drafting legislation that would grant U.S. personnel involved in the terrorism fight new protections against prosecution for past violations of the War Crimes Act of 1996, remember, passed by a Republican Congress. That law criminalizes violations of the Geneva Conventions governing conduct in war and threatens the death penalty if U.S.-held detainees die in custody from abusive treatment.
Really?
Yes. So they only just realized that actually their own Republican Congress in 1996 passed a law which you're sentenced to death if any detainee dies in your custody. So now they're trying to overturn it and retroact it so that you're no longer guilty of your past violations, your past crimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. But technically right now they...
But technically right now
they should face capital punishment.
Exactly.
They've committed war crimes.
Well, many of these top generals in charge of Guantanamo or Abu Ghraib or whether or not if this goes straight up to Bush and Donald Rumsfeld, they could face the death penalty. That would be so amazing. That would be so wicked if we had our first president ever face the death penalty.
Face the needle down there in Texas. You become what you fear.
Exactly.
You know, Bush is going to have to, you know, face up to the what he's been responsible for. He himself will go down that path. If that were on pay-per-view, I'd definitely pay $20 to see that.
Yeah.
You know, that would definitely be a good show.
Well, that's pretty amazing. We'll follow that story.
Obviously, they're going to have to quickly pass a law or kill a Supreme Court judge or something. I mean, they're not going to obey the law. They haven't obeyed any laws yet for 6 years. Why would they start obeying the law now?
I don't know. I can't see any reason.
All righty. Well, this is the beginning of yet another exciting week. Now, when do we leave for London? Saturday?
Saturday. Next Saturday. So 6 days from now.
Okay. We'll be in London doing our show in residence, taking your phone calls, I think. Do they have that set up at the studio at residence?
Yes.
Last time I checked, it was kind of, you know.
It is Ramshackle Radio.
They had like a couple of Dixie cups and a string out there into Connaught Square.
Mm-hmm.
Out there in the Soho.
Connaught Square. You're talking about Blair's home.
Soho. What's some of the features of Soho? The Old Compton Street, of course.
Old Compton Street. Bar Italia.
You know, cruise.
Mm-hmm. Bar Italia.
Bar Italia.
Yes. Residence is in Denmark Street, so it's actually officially the West End. It's not Soho.
All right. And then we're having a Karma Bank meetup.
Yeah. We have about 7 or 8 people. I'm not quite sure.
It was Saturday afternoon?
Either Saturday afternoon or Sunday. It's going to be up to you, honey bunny.
Oh, really?
How you feel. Like, what you think is best. Do you want your time before the show?
Well, it might be fun, you know.
Okay. So we're going to meet everybody at, I guess, 4 o'clock.
And this show's going to be completely a chaos. So it should be fun.
Well, it's very Residence 104.4 FM.
Just going to do Ramshackle a good little show there.
Yeah, exactly. Oops, sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay, honey.